Welcome to the podcast component of ArmageddonLetters.com, a virtual time machine back to the moment the world was nearly destroyed in late October 1962. You can also follow us on Twitter at ArmageddonTweet. I'm Jim Blight.
And I'm Janet Lang. The Cuban Missile Crisis happened a half century ago. It was our closest call to catastrophic nuclear war. In 1962, John F. Kennedy was the president of the United States. And what we want to talk about a little bit in this podcast is what did Kennedy learn from his experience in the crisis and after the crisis? Back to 1962, Kennedy has gone through the Cuban Missile Crisis. The world did not blow up due to some good decisions that he made, but also good decisions that Khrushchev made and some good decisions that Castro made, and also a lot of luck. So what does he learn?
Analytical JFK. He was very analytical, by the way. He was a very good student of history. He published his senior thesis at Harvard and became a best-selling book. This guy was really smart. From his experience in the missile crisis, as he analyzed it, he came to one set of conclusions that really put him at odds with both his civilian and military advisors. Number one, nuclear strategy, which was emerging then as a very hot field to be in. How to balance so many of these and so many of those, and how many missiles do you need to counterbalance what the Soviets have? Do you have to threaten that you can get rid of, and what's your first strike capability? To JFK, it is just completely useless. How does he know that? Because he knows they had a 17-to-1 advantage in deliverable nuclear weapons over the Russians during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And yet, as he looks back on it, he knows, he remembers clearly.
And he feels.
He was deterred by the possibility that one Soviet missile would fall on one American city. One. This is an era when we have tens of thousands of nuclear weapons, and they're trying to fine-tune this whole arms balance business.
And nuclear strategy at this point is something like, well, if there's a nuclear exchange between the superpowers, the one that goes first, yes, indeed, there will be millions and millions of people who are dead, but you might end up saving 60 million lives, but, you know, there will be tens of thousands, if not more than that, dead. That's the kind of thinking that's going on. And Kennedy, from his experience in the missile crisis, knows that this is irrelevant, that a leader that thinks like that is not a good leader for a nuclear-powered country.
I believe, and Janet believes, Kennedy looked at his advisors during the Cuban Missile Crisis and says, but General, you're calling for me to make a decision endorsing mass murder, and I'm not going to do it. That's what Kennedy remembers. And yet the nuclear strategists are constantly putting stuff in front of him. You need more of these and more of these and more of these, otherwise the Soviets will have the advantage.
Now, one of the other things that Kennedy, analytical JFK as we're calling him right now, learns here is that there really has been, in a sense, a revolution that's occurred that he appreciates totally, but some of his advisors don't. And the distinction is that in World War II, the U.S. did indeed use nuclear weapons against Japan, and many believe that it was responsible for ending the war earlier than might have been. But remember, Japan was not a nuclear power, so there was no sense of retaliation. You didn't have to worry about that. Now, in 1962, the Soviets have nuclear weapons, the U.S. has nuclear weapons. It's a totally different ball game, a totally different mental ball game. Kennedy gets it, Khrushchev gets it. Kennedy's advisors, a lot of Khrushchev's advisors, don't get it. Kennedy learns this.
Now, we like to call this a paradigm shift. You cannot play the war game the way you used to. That's what Kennedy learns from it, and I think Nikita Khrushchev learned exactly the same thing. This is not like the old days. While these guys that are advising Kennedy were all senior people in the Second World War, remember, this is less than 20 years after the end of the Second World War, the way you fought those wars are no longer relevant to the nuclear age. That's Kennedy's conclusion. We are in a new paradigm. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't mentally in the new paradigm yet, and that makes it very, very dangerous. and they hate Kennedy because they don't see any new paradigm. What they see is a young, inexperienced president afraid to throw his weight around when he should throw his weight around because the fate of the free world is on the table, and he needs to be more forceful. In other words, he needs to be more threatening. He needs to be willing to use these nuclear weapons. And he's already concluded, and we have plenty of evidence on this now, he's already concluded not only is he not going to listen to them when they tell him when and where to use them, he's not going to use them at all. These, in fact, they aren't even weapons. What these are doomsday devices. You set one off, it'll escalate, you'll blow up the world, and won't you be happy you did it?
Well, the other thing that analytical JFK, and I would say analytical Nikita Khrushchev as well, understand is that we need to start thinking about and working together on abolishing nuclear weapons. They want to really begin to get a sense of pulling back from this nuclear abyss. Now, they do make a little bit of progress in an atmospheric test ban, but what's interesting and what is extremely sad is that this notion that both leaders of both superpowers had after the conclusion of the missile crisis to push back, push away from nuclear weapons, that gets lost because in a year Kennedy is dead and in a little under 2 years Khrushchev is out of power. So we lose that kind of thing.
And we lost a lot
by
losing the experience of the head of a government who had ultimate responsibility for using or not using nuclear weapons or for trying to get out of the damn crisis that nobody expected. And Sergei Khrushchev, our former colleague at Brown University and Nikita Khrushchev's son, wrote that after his father learned of Kennedy's assassination, it's an odd phrase, but it fits here. He says, it is to weep, and his reference is to that his father would not have his partner working with him toward the elimination of nuclear weapons, for peaceful coexistence, for, in effect, ending the Cold War in the 1960s instead of 1991.
Kennedy understood that with nuclear weapons on both sides, that even though politically the two sides differed dramatically and were at odds, that they had to find ways of competing in non-military ways. And so you have his wonderful speech at American University, and he talks about peace, and he makes some reference and says that oftentimes peace, people dismiss it as sort of wide-eyed, idealistic, but it isn't. It's something that we can work toward, and he talks about how even though the Soviet Union and the U.S. have tremendous differences, we also have a lot of things in common. As he says, we breathe the same air. We all care about our children's future. That these are things to work on. And all of this, we believe, comes really out of the missile crisis, of his understanding that with nuclear weapons, it is too dangerous to engage in any kind of military competition because it can so easily escalate and get way out of control. Now, what happens, as Jim said, it is to weep that a year later he's dead. And Khrushchev's partner is Lyndon Johnson, a totally different president who is much more ideologically committed,
a Cold Warrior,
and who didn't have the same sense from the missile crisis. He was much more in that sense of some of Kennedy's advisors, that Kennedy could have gotten more, could have pushed more, and so forth. So it's a very different partner that Nikita Khrushchev has for his last year.
Nuclear weapons, get to zero, keep away from the brink, do not even begin to think about these weapons as something you're going to use in any foreseeable circumstance. So that's the first big basket of things that Kennedy himself learned. The second thing, and this is something Kennedy appreciated long before the missile crisis from his experience in the South Pacific and fighting the Japanese in the Second World War, but boy, did it really reinforce it as the data started coming in after the crisis. He learns that the mightiest power on earth, the United States of America, cannot necessarily get its way, even with a little pipsqueak country like Cuba. He can't really, in this age, with all the risks involved, if Cuba now has attached itself in some fashion to the Soviet Union, he can't just go in there and whack Castro and throw them out and put somebody else in place the way the CIA and the U.S. government tended to operate for the first part of the 20th century. You can't do it because it's too risky, and because sometimes people who are from countries that are small and weak are also extremely committed to something. It could be religion, it could be an ideology, it could be a lot of different things.
Their nation.
Therefore, and this is counterintuitive, and you can imagine how much trouble Kennedy is going to have explaining this to his generals. By God, these little pipsqueak countries, they can hurt you. There are people so committed and so, call them stubborn if you want to, zealous, so stubborn that they are going to force you to commit genocide in order for you to get your way. Kennedy brings this mentality out of the Cuban Missile Crisis. He didn't want a war in Cuba. There were projections that an invasion of Cuba would cost 25,000 men in the first week if the Soviets / Cubans didn't use nuclear weapons. But we now know they would have. They would have, and the estimates on casualties on the American side, if nuclear weapons had been used against them, there weren't any estimates because they didn't know how to make them because they were so high. They would have been astronomically high. Well, Kennedy somehow, he absorbs all this and brings it to bear on many of his decisions in 1963. Not only on the comprehensive test ban and all that stuff that he's working with Khrushchev, very, very important. But on the other side, you're going to have to respect smaller countries. And in the favorite speech of Janet, or at least one of her favorite Kennedy speeches, at the University of Washington on November 15th, 1961, he has already said to the American people, it's not like the old days. We are 6% of the world's population. We can't just go running up San Juan Hill and screaming and hollering and expect the natives to run away. It's not that kind of world anymore. We have to respect small nations as well as big nations, not because you're going to be Mr. Nice Guy, but because they can hurt you.
The seeds of his sensibilities about the limits of U.S. military power are there in 1961. They're there when he chooses, against all the advice that he's getting, for example, in the Bay of Pigs, of not sending in the Marines and letting the exile attack fail. Castro thinks that eventually Kennedy will send in the Marines. He's wrong about that, because Kennedy, in his mind, we think, through a number of his foreign policy difficulties in 1961, learns that there's a real difference between covert action and other kinds of things he might do and combat troops. And he doesn't send combat troops anywhere in his presidency. Now, this sensibility that he's, in a sense, been developing and has been nurtured by a number of crises in 61 gets absolutely solidified, let's say, when it is conjoined with nuclear risk. And coming out of the missile crisis, you have a Kennedy who, first of all, is stronger politically because the U.S. and other countries have seen this as sort of, well, thank God we didn't have a nuclear war. And so he's able to really much more easily assert this sense of no combat troops during my presidency.
Kennedy sends a messenger to Fidel Castro in November of 1963. The messenger is Jean Daniel, a famous French journalist, and he asks Jean Daniel to ask Castro, who's going to Cuba, ask Castro, does Fidel Castro understand how incredibly dangerous that crisis was, the Cuban Missile Crisis? That's what I want to know, and I want him to know that we have to find a way to reduce these risks, Cuba and us, and we need to talk. Jean Daniel goes to Cuba. The message gets to Fidel that he wants to see him and why, and Fidel honors that. They go out to Varadero, east of Havana. They sit down, they're about ready to eat lunch, and somebody breaks into the room and says that Kennedy has been shot. And then a while later, half hour or so, Kennedy is dead. And Castro tells this story in 1992 to us at a conference, and he said, you know, I think I knew a lot more than Kennedy did about how dangerous this crisis was because I was here in the theater of operations. And I would really, really have liked to discuss this with John F. Kennedy. Visit us regularly for more in the podcast series, as well as news about our new book, short films, graphic novels, and blogs by our three indubitable leaders. And don't forget to visit us at facebook.com/Armageddon Letters. I am Jim Blight.
And I'm Janet Lang.